My name is Claire Peterson, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Morning. Mundu Mumano, member of the committee.
Oh, good morning. My name is Grace Sagan, a member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Helen Muller, member of the committee.
Morning, everyone. My name is Boyce Watiemo, member of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Sarah Paulson, member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Liesel van der Merwe. I'm a member of this committee.
Varo Bayard from Zivi Kele, an NGO working on gender.
Ali van Jaarsveld, ex-member of parliament and also part of the NGO now.
I'm Zaline Merrington from SABC Radio.
I am Tony Barjogbe, I'm from PMG.
Good morning, Lydia Pretorius from the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Good morning, I'm Kina Muruane from the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Good morning, Tami Ndlovu from Department of Women.
Morning, Chair, I'm Llewellyn Lowe from the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Morning, Tanya Gamutwainge, Acting DG at the Department for Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
My name is Lulu Kongwana, Minister for Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Thomas Macheni. I'm the Acting CFO of the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. Thank you.
It always feels comfortable to know who you are sitting with and who you are speaking to. This morning we are here to get a briefing from the department on the annual report, and they will also talk to us about the turnaround strategy. The report will be based on the budget, the threat plan, and the annual performance plan for the financial year 2011-2012. The Department for Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities was established to emphasize the need for equity and access to development opportunities for vulnerable groups in South Africa. This department was created in May 2009 to replace the former national multi-agency structures in the presidency, which lacked sufficient financial and human resources and the necessary authority to coordinate and oversee their mandate. And then it started migrating in 2010 when it started operating on their own, from their own accounts. The purpose of the department is to drive the government's equity, equality, and empowerment agenda with regard to marginalized groups and historically disadvantaged communities in each of these three sectors. Its mission is to create an enabling environment that translates constitutional obligations, policies, and legislative frameworks into the realization of gender, disability, and children's rights. The department also aims to assist public funded institutions, organs of civil society, state-owned enterprises, and the private sector to achieve national and global goals for gender equality and the rights of children and persons with disability. Its legislative mandate includes international treaties such as the Convention on the Rights of the Child, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability, and the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. The department is governed by all the laws that inform equality, empowerment, human rights, and human dignity processes. And these include, among others, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996, and all other acts. The department is also expected to comply with the Public Finance Management Act No. 1 of 1999 and National Treasury Regulations insofar as producing and tabling an annual report within the stipulated time frame and adhering to financial guidelines. As we give over to the department shall also be able to tell us to what extent did they allocate budget to give effect to legislation such as the Domestic Violence Act and the Children's Act, and also whether the department used legislation to fulfill its mandate of mainstreaming the rights of women, children, and people with disabilities. I will now hand over to the department.
And good morning to honorable members. Our department has been able to present the annual report, table it on time, and also this year once again we've been able to achieve an unqualified report, a financial report from the Auditor General. Of course, there are matters of emphasis and there are challenges in the department. I have reported in my budget speech in May this year that there were investigations that were taking place in the department regarding nepotism, fraud and mismanagement. The report from Flaxman is ready and I would like to present to the chairperson. We are now busy with the recommendations of that report as well as the Auditor General's findings. Several meetings have taken place between my department and the National Treasury to work on a turnaround strategy. One of the discussions and conclusions from National Treasury was that I had no DG, I had no CFO, and I had no HR. The Auditor General has also corroborated this lack of leadership in the department. I have met with the Minister of Finance to request additional funding but also to discuss the turnaround strategy with him. And he was satisfied with our plan and was able to give us additional funding of 19 million to assist us in particular to address the question of urgent vacancies, which are crucial to ensure systems are in place, especially in finance, in supply chain management, internal audit, and risk management. I'm happy to report to honorable members that we have already an internal audit unit and an internal audit committee in place, although it took a long time to employ an internal audit. It only happened when I intervened, because I was told it's difficult to get these people. I intervened and participated in the interview and were able to get a suitable candidate who is now working in the department with the audit committee. The Flaxman's report on the investigation has revealed serious transgressions in relation to appointment of staff, payment of overtime, payment of resettlement costs, and dishonesty in declaration of interest during the recruitment process. These, in my view, have contributed immensely to the current over-expenditure and lack of expertise in the department. This has affected the performance of the department. We have found that most people that have been employed are people that don't have skills, are people that have been put in corporate management, mostly support staff. Where we need people for our core business, we still have crucial vacancies. This is why I say, therefore, it has impacted on the performance of the department. It would appear that there has been gross negligence on the part of the former DG, the former CFO, and senior officials within the Human Resource and Resource Management Directorate. The improper appointments in key positions have contributed to the level of poor performance within corporate management, thus leading to audit findings and failure to address these effectively. While 3 out of 8 employees implicated in the Flaxman's report have left the department, I have initiated disciplinary proceedings against 5 who are still in the department. They have been suspended and disciplinary proceedings and charges have been given to them. But we are also following up with those that are outside, including the DG and the CFO. The CFO resigned in the middle of the audit, and she just decided to resign before the Auditor General completed the audit. We negotiated with her, we asked her to stay until the audit is finalized. She refused flatly. And there's no way, I don't have the power to stop someone. They have a right to resign. I did all I can in my power, but she decided she's going. So she left, was it July? She left in July. We had asked her in June.
No.
Because we asked her to stay until August.
Until end of August, yes, ma'am. So she left 30 June.
She left in June, before the report was finished. We asked her to stay another 2 months. She refused. So we continued without her. But we have been fortunate. We have appealed to the National Treasury, and they borrowed us the acting CFO, who has done a lot of good work and assisted in stabilizing the department. We've also been assisted by the Statistics General since the census is finalized now, he was able to second a number of officials for... Okay. So that they can also assist us, particularly in the finance department. It is therefore important to emphasize that while we are responding to issues that relate to irregular expenditure incurred in the past financial year, the committee should be mindful that we are pursuing those that are responsible. There have been findings regarding the CFO were pursuing those with her at home, wherever she is. The report of the Auditor General and the report of the Flaxman's report both implicate the Director General were pursuing these with her. She asked for a transfer from Mpumalanga before the reports were out, so she's in Mpumalanga, were pursuing these matters with her. The implication of the irregularities committed is that the department is now staffed with people that do not meet the requirements, and this is affecting performance. It is for this reason, therefore, that management is conducting a verification of qualifications. We have asked SACA to do a speedy verification of qualifications of staff in the department. We are also asking the Department of Public Service and Administration to do a skills audit to see whether whoever is in finance, are they supposed to be there, or if they need to be elsewhere, we shall redeploy. As the executing authority, I am holding management accountable on a regular basis to ensure that we implement the recommendations of the two reports, but also to ensure that I am appraised on financial matters on a monthly basis. The process of turning the department around requires close monitoring, and in this regard, we have agreed with the Auditor General that management will brief me on a monthly basis on progress on the turnaround. The Acting Director General will now present the annual report of the department and the turnaround. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to start by saying that we've made significant progress to address the audit findings by Auditor General, and management is aware of what is wrong. We are also aware of what needs to be done to correct things, and we are working very hard to correct things. You remember that we took a decision to introduce austerity measures to make sure that we avoid irregular expenditure for 2012 and 13. And to date, we can report that this has yielded positive results for the department, in the sense that we are currently at 52% on expenditure, and the year is at 50%. And with the current additional allocation through the A&E processes, additional allocation of 12 million rands, we are now at 44%. So we're doing very well given the challenges that we've been facing for the past 2 years. And we can say that this is the first victory of the turnaround process. We've also done a thorough analysis or assessment of the baseline to make sure that for the next coming years we're still within the budget that National Treasury has allocated to us. As we are all aware that all departments have been asked to do a 1%, 2%, and 3% cut for the next 3 years. We're able to do that within the means that we have with the assistance of National Treasury and Statistics South Africa. Yeah, We are in agreement with the findings of the AG, and as Minister has indicated, that the challenges that we are now facing have to do with the skills and capacity within the department, which is why we've spoken to our colleagues at National Treasury and Statistics South Africa. We are accurately identifying the gaps because we feel that it will not help to have action plans that are trying to address issues if your analysis or your assessment of the problem is not done properly. So with this assistance from these organizations, we are working very hard to make sure that the analysis of the gap is accurate. We've also are being assisted in terms of risk management by Auditor General, by Accountant General. We've managed to hold two workshops on risk assessment. We now have a risk register, and our internal auditor is working through it to make sure that we now have an audit plan. That audit plan will assist us in checking the controls that we put in place and make sure that we achieve a clean audit by end of the financial year and going forward. Financial information and HR information is being thoroughly analyzed on a regular basis using the Vulindlela report from National Treasury to make sure that management has intelligent information where we can make decisions. And this will go a long way in making sure that we achieve a clean audit going forward. We also have an audit policy that has been drafted and a fraud prevention plan. We will now be starting with the fraud awareness workshop, which is a requirement from National Treasury. The findings on information on performance information are again a reflection of the skills challenge that the department is facing, and management is addressing this. We have developed a performance monitoring and evaluation policy to guide management on how to compile information, performance information, and also to say how do you collect evidence, how do you compile evidence. And the recent confirmation of additional funding will assist us also to get external training on performance, on monitoring and evaluation for our managers. The management structures are being utilized to monitor progress on the action plans. Following the Auditor General's audit and the findings, management has compiled an action plan in terms of how are we going to address the findings. And internal audit is assisting in verifying the progress that has been done so far, and this is reported on a regular basis at management meetings. As Minister has also confirmed that we have reinforced oversight, where Minister is holding us accountable on a regular basis on financial management. We've also managed to sign an agreement with Accountant General, where we're getting a multidisciplinary team that will sit with us and assist us on a regular basis. So going to our performance information, Chair, I'd like to go to this slide. Basically, where we go to the summary of our performance information, slide 11. Right. Basically, overall, the department has achieved 60% of its planned targets, and 40% has not been achieved, and mostly the reasons are due to capacity and financial constraints. We are addressing this because we found that some of our targets were not smart, and we committed to things that were not really within our control as a department, and this is being addressed. We also found that there's a need to align individual performance to organizational performance so that there's motivation for people to achieve the targets that the department has agreed to. So for administration, program one, we had 37 targets achieved, which is 34%, 66% of the total targets that have been achieved, with program 2, 41% targets achieved. Program 3, that's where we did well, 80% of the planned targets were achieved. Program 4, 57% of targets were achieved. What we also are doing to improve performance is to make sure that as we report on a regular basis, we collect evidence, because what we experienced was that throughout the year we would be thinking that we are performing, but come audit, when we verify, then the performance level is reduced to a lower level. So now on an ongoing basis, we're verifying and tracking the performance information. Then we go to our highlights. In the last financial year, Jefferson, we managed to draft the National Policy on Women Empowerment and Gender Equality. We have a draft Rural Women Development Strategy. We've also launched the Women and Budget Initiative. And as you recall, the FFP emphasized on this gender-responsive budgeting. We also managed to establish an interim National Council Against the Gender-Based Violence. We successfully hosted Women's Day, and we also co-hosted the ministerial sword turning ceremony for the Kakuba Community Center, which will house the Women Memorial Hall in Port St. John's. With regards to Program 3, Chairperson, we hosted an inaugural Nelson Mandela Children's Parliament, the National Children's Day celebration, focusing on climate change, and it was held at the Union Building. We launched a report on children and climate change on the 19th of November. We also had an interdepartmental committee on the rights of the child. The department also launched the Techno Girls project within the mining sector, where currently 200 girls are participating. We hosted a successful sword training ceremony in partnership with the City of Tshwane, Tarofken Police Services, Correctional Services, and the National Treasury for Masego Khomo Memorial Park. On Program 4, Chairperson, the National Accessibility Awareness Campaign was launched. The draft National Disability Policy has been developed, and the Disability Awareness Month was successfully conducted. You will recall, Chairperson, these are the forums that we use to increase awareness on disability issues. We also coordinated and monitored distribution of wheelchairs countrywide in collaboration with the Airports Company of South Africa and the Department of Health, as we understand that a lot of people with disabilities need these instruments, the assistive devices, and most of them are expensive. So it goes a long way in making sure that that burden is reduced on their part. Now, going through the audit outcomes and the progress we've made to address what Auditor General has found in the past year, with regards to unauthorized expenditure, as alluded earlier, we found that the overexpenditure on compensation is largely because we hired people at higher notches instead of minimum entry level. And this has been stopped, and we are also ensuring that in every recruitment process, there's confirmation in writing by the CFO that there is funding, and everybody that is being appointed is being appointed at entry level. We also feel that the baseline reassessment will assist us in ensuring that we don't overspend again. On goods and services, as most of our work entails advocacy, and when we say we want to have a discussion or want to consult with the sectors, most of the time we have to bring them to the venues because we're dealing with mostly people that come from poor backgrounds and who also need to be transported to the venues because of their physical needs. So we end up spending a lot of money on this, and in most instances then we overspend. But what we're doing, what we've done, we feel that the reprieve on the department in that the national events now, there's been a cabinet decision that these must be hosted by the Department of Arts and Culture. This will decrease the expenditure on our part. However, in instances where we were expected to participate as a department, our procurement department becomes involved from the beginning to the end to make sure that everything is done within the law. We've scrutinized our foreign travel. The delegations have been reduced. And in most instances, people play a dual role when they travel, and they travel because it is necessary for people to travel. With regards to overspending on transfers, is mostly where we have to pay money for leave gratuity. People who resign, and by law you have to pay the leave gratuity within a particular period. And because you can never tell when people will resign, it's difficult to budget for that. However, going forward, what we'll do is to use the previous trends to estimate what we need to budget for on these items. With regards to weak internal controls, the cause there was due to insufficient staff capacity within the finance environment, supply chain unit, and also the lack of systems in place in terms of policies, procedures, and all of that, and not doing in-ear monitoring regularly in the manner that we're expected to do in the, by the law. So what we've done, as Minister mentioned, we have now sourced an adequately skilled acting CFO from the Office of the Accountant General. We've also sourced supportive staff who have vast experience in finance, in the finance area, and the agreement is that as and when the need arises, we'll extend this to other areas. Because now we're also talking to getting assistance in terms of people who are able to develop electronic management systems so that we're able to put our personal information on that system. That will reduce the burden on our colleagues in collecting data manually, and it will also make the information more accessible, easier. And because we're doing it internally and with our colleagues, this will not attract financial implications for the department. We've also started training for all staff on SCM, which is supply chain management, to make sure that everybody understands the rules, because as we know, this is the high-risk area for all departments. And this is a continuing process, Chairperson. In-year monitoring is being done on a regular basis now, and the reports are also being presented at management level. We also want to state that the financial information now is being presented in a format that will assist the department to be able to avoid the errors that we're experiencing compiling the annual financial statements in the current audit. The Auditor General also highlighted that we delayed in appointing an internal auditor, and as the Minister alluded earlier, the capacity and the skills level within the HR unit also to some extent contributed to this, because we had to do the process three times, the advertising, the interviewing, and, you know, three times, because the first candidate declined, then we started afresh again, advertising, interviewing. The second candidate did not meet the security clearance. Then we had to start again, and then we were lucky with the third candidate. We could have short-circuited that process, but that is now, you know, I think water under the bridge, but that is the reason. This is what caused this delay, Chairperson. And now with the support of the Office of the Accountant General, the incumbent is getting support in terms of making sure that she is able to start doing her work despite the fact that she's alone in the department. And we are also getting a co-sourced internal audit function. As soon as the audit plan is finalized, we will know the actual financial implications in getting a co-sourced service, and then we'll be able to start the process of doing internal audits, the verifications of all the areas that we've highlighted as risk areas. We've also committed with AG, Auditor General, that they should come back now in October to do an interim audit so that they can see how have we done since April 2012, what has changed, so that we are also able to quickly fix those areas that are still not doing well. Because, Chairperson, as I've indicated, that the plan is to have a clean audit for 2012. And while we did not get a qualified audit, despite the challenges that we had, we still feel that we need a clean audit. The late appointment of the audit committee chair there is just that the process was not done fast enough, but to date we can report that the committee has been appointed and it has met at least three times in this since they were appointed. And one of the things that they did was to review the annual financial statements. The non-implementation of the AG recommendations. Here, we again want to stress that it was really the inadequate skill level that we had. But now what we can report is that we have an action plan to address, as I've indicated earlier, that the internal auditor has sat down with management to say, here are the findings, what plans have you put in place to address this, by when are you going to address it, and then she goes and verifies and she reports back to management. So this is being done to make sure that we don't get repeat findings. And then the inadequate collection of revenue, the current debt that is sitting on our books, Chairperson, for over 3 million rands, we feel that if we look at the background, it's a debt that was incurred a long time ago before even the department was established. And we feel that it was an accounting error that it was transferred to us from the presidency, because I think it was incurred at the time that the office was incubated in the presidency in 2002, which is like a long time ago. So it should have been, they've had a number of financial years to collect, to recover that debt. So AG has advised us that we need to take it back. Using the accounting processes, we need to take it back to the presidency, but we'll also have discussions with them, Chairperson. The other uncollected debt was just funds from ZERCO, but now we've processed the journals and the money has been recovered. The overall... In our financial chair, there's a debt that is owing to the department, and it's been owing from the previous financial year for about it's around 3 million rands. By law, we're supposed to recover it or write it off if we feel that we can't recover it. On the slide. No, it's not there. I'm talking to the audit finding that says inadequate revenue collection. Oh, it's not on the figures, ma'am. I can refer you to a page on the annual financials. Yes. FIDA.
I don't know if honourable members have got the annual reports. If you look at page 127, it's in the notes there.
Yes. Chair, then I'd like to hand over to my colleague just to go through the financial information.
Thank you, Chair. Looking at the overall expenditure analysis for the financial year per program, we can see that the big overspending happened in Program 1, Administration, where it is the 23 million overspending. Program 2 and Program 4 didn't overspend, and Program 3 had an overspending of about 1.8 million. So in total, looking at the departmental overspending of 22.7 million, Chairperson, you will see that the funding for the commission has been shown separately because it's ring-fenced, so it's not money that we can really touch. So at the end of the day, we were only looking at a final appropriation of approximately 87.9 million. Then there was just a breakdown on the overall expenditure analysis in terms of the graph to show what is the specifics on compensation, on goods and services, transfers, and capital. On compensation, we overspent by 11.3 million, goods and services 12.3, the transfer payments was 99,000, and then there was an underspending on the capital expenditure, bringing the total to 22.7 million overspending. If we look at compensation breakdown, as Chairperson, as you can see, that the biggest overspending happened in Program 1, 10.8 million. In terms of Program 2 and Program 4, there was no overspending, and then on Program 3 as well, there's a 1.2 million overspending. So the total overspending on compensation was 11.3 million. As the acting DG alluded now, in terms of the turnaround strategy, as well as the executive authority indicated that money has been secured now in terms of additional funding for compensation, and the carry-through effect in the MTF process has also been addressed, so that this is not a repetitive exercise in the next financial years. Looking at goods and services, again under administration, the overspending is 13.5. Program 2 and 4 didn't overspend, and then Program 3 had a small overspending of about 500,000, bringing the total to the 12.3 million on goods and services. The main cost drivers in terms of goods and services, we looked at advertising, and this is the figures that has also been published in the annual report. Advertising relates to the recruitment. We spent approximately 680,000 rand on recruitment for various positions, audit committee members and candidates for the CGE. Marketing expenditure, 5.5 million. That is all the expenditure related to the national events, awareness initiatives and all those activities in terms of marketing from the core functions program 2, 3 and 4. Then also on consultants, due to the fact that we didn't have an asset management function, we had to bring consultants on board, as well as the establishment of the supplier database for compliance with SCM policies, and then also legal costs, the 300,000 as alluded, that this was a dismissal of the former advisor to the former minister. This was a court judgment. Then contractors, 3.9 million. This is money that is spent on the hosting of events to supply the infrastructure specifically for these type of events, sound equipment, tents, stages, and we have indicated which events that we are referring to. This is all the national celebration events. Then the biggest cost driver in the department is traveling subsistence. Domestic, it was 14.9. foreign aid was 3.9. Now, if we look at the domestic situation, and it's indicated there, Chairperson, the 14.9 is not specifically for departmental staff. We are not that big of a department to incur that amount only on our staff. This is also relating to the non-employee part, where we have to bring the civil society to the events, as the acting DG alluded. People must be transported. When we looked at National Children's Day, the children must be transported by means of bus services. Rural women must be transported by means of bus services or wherever the event is taking place. So this is the expenditure that the department incurred for non-employees so that we can also have a positive effect on that. And on transfer payments, as we indicated, this is the ring-fenced money for CGE, so there's not a lot to explain there. And then on machinery and equipment, we had an underspending of 1.1 million, but this was relating to certain funding. As soon as we realized that there is an overspending, certain functions have been stopped, so certain procurement of or machinery or capital expenditure has been stopped. Looking at the status of the expenditure as at the current financial year, the mid-year, Chairperson, you will see on compensation, the 57.1 million, we've spent 31.5. We should have been on 28 million. And then on goods and services, we are rather on par. We've spent 26.9. We should have spent 26.6 million. Transfers, we are on par, and capital expenditure is still low. So at this stage, as the acting DG alluded, we are currently standing on 50, just over 50%. So at this stage, we are really trying to have a very tight control over the budget so that we do not overspend. The monitoring function, the in-year monitoring, is very effective at this stage. And then if you look at the status for the remainder of the financial year, where we include the additional funding of 12 million on compensation, Chairperson, you will see that our compensation will increase to 69.1 million. We are projecting a 63.1 million spending, so there will be underspending of 6 million. However, this money will be earmarked for certain critical positions as discussed with the acting DG as well as the minister, so that we ensure that we have certain functions in place, specifically in the finance and supply chain unit, risk management and internal audit. If we look at goods and services, we are projecting on a linear trend that we might overspend with 500,000. However, this is expenditure that can be controlled. This is not something like salaries that must go on a monthly basis. So as part of the austerity measures and cost containment measures, we will ensure definitely that we will stay within this budget. Transfer payments, we will be on par. The projection there is just on a linear basis in terms of the leave gratuity. Capital expenditure, we will not overspend. So in total, Chairperson, we as a department will try to ensure that we will stay within our 184 million. We will not overspend as part of this exercise due to the fact that we have received additional funding. In terms of the solutions and measures implemented, Chairperson, the in-year monitoring reports are now being compiled on a monthly basis. We are submitting it to the DG's office for review, as this is also a compliance matter in terms of National Treasury. But it's not just for the sake of submitting reports. We have to also analyze these reports so that we can ensure that where there are problem areas, we address them well in advance. Monthly cash flow reports has been sent out to the responsibility managers, specifically financial discipline and monitoring. I must say that at this stage, the responsibility managers is taking this very seriously. They are not just buying left, right, and center. They are also looking at the finances available. We in finance, together with the acting CFO, have now decided that instead of doing this on a monthly basis, we're going to do it now bi-monthly. So at the beginning of the month, in the middle of the month as well, we will send out these reports as part of the cost containment measures. In terms of the MTS process, we have received our baseline amounts, and then we have reprioritized from goods and services funding to compensation so that we have the carry-through effect on our compensation budget so that we do not overspend. And also what assisted us there is in terms of the national celebration days that is no longer with us, we could reprioritize some of these funding for the next three financial years. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Then with regards to human resources, we are currently at 11.3% in terms of the vacancy rate. There is no, we're not aware of any benchmark or standard in terms of the vacancy rate, but this one is at least above 10%, which is a bit of a problem. And with this process, since now we have the additional funding, we will start filling those positions. But if I can just go into detail with administration, we're at 3.9% in terms of the vacancy. You'll see our biggest vacancy is within women empowerment and gender equality, and that's where also we are experiencing low performance in terms of the targets, and this is a direct impact on that. Also, children's rights and responsibilities, the vacancy rate is 30%, which is high, and the rights of people with disabilities is 18%. Then with regards to our remuneration information, I mean, in terms of what we look like, where do we have most our people? Most of the people that we have in the organization are at, at senior management level, which is level 13 and 16. And we are very aware that this is an anomaly. We're addressing it because you need to have most of your people at skilled areas, which is between deputy direct at between level 9 to 12, because those are your pushers, those are your paper pushers and the implementers. Sorry. So in the turnaround, we which I will talk to later. We talk about reviewing the strategy, reviewing the organogram, and making sure that we have people in the right places that will enable us to achieve 100% of our target. Then that is the end of the presentation, Chairperson. I'm not sure if you want me to go straight into the turnaround.
Agreeable on that? Is there any other? Okay, I will then see the show of hands. Let me thank the presenter for a comprehensive presentation. And I will note him. Honorable Peterson and Honorable Cohen, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought that you'll start from the beginning, from the first person, then you go this way. thank you. But even if Jefferson, you have not done that, thank you very much. And thank you, Minister, for your presentation and the department for the detailed presentation. It's unfortunate that you are starting your presentation with the challenges, trying to, raising the challenges and responding to the challenges that have been raised by the AG. So unfortunate, because they've been expecting the, success stories, achievements that have been done by the department. so it's something else. You know, you have been talking yesterday that members of the department were here, we have been strategizing, and members of the department were here.
Mm-hmm.
So they were taking everything that you have been discussing yesterday, and you have come up with a strategy to respond to all those issues that we have discussed yesterday. Besides that, Chair, in the opening remarks of the Minister in the annual report, he made mention that much more still needs to be done, and further working together with other departments and partners will assist in making sure that we open opportunities for women, rural women and persons with disabilities to participate in the green economy, or solar energy, waste, tourism, agriculture, and etc. The annual performance plan 2011-2012 reflects that by the end of this financial year under review, the department will be through with the gender mainstreaming strategy and the guidelines too. And to our surprise, this has not been the case, according to the information that we are receiving from the annual report. How do you see yourself holding other departments accountable without this important measuring tool? And how do you see yourself holding other departments and private sector accountable in making sure that they mainstream disability and children's rights in their work, and the private sector? Generally, where do you see this department in 10 years to come? Because what you are raising today is that there was a lack, we don't know now, there was a lack of expertise within your department. There is negligence, a lot of negligence in your department. There's corruption, there's nepotism, and so forth. How do you see yourself, or where do you see yourself in the next coming 10 years? Because majority of the rural women out there are looking forward to this department. Majority of persons with disabilities are looking forward to this department so that they can be able to change the lives of the department. And how then the department... how then has the department been able to guide its officials in this regard and lead other government departments as a custodians of women's, children's, and disability rights? And how do we make sure that we track information and work which has been previously done and incorporated it in our work? Remember that we have inherited this office. We have had these offices previously in the offices of the presidency, but it seems as if we are starting a new work in this department. Everything is draft, not yet finalized, even if we have agreed in the annual performance plan and the strategic planning to say by the year end 2011-2012 we'll be through with this draft policies. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you for the presentations, and I really share the view of the Honourable Member in first alerting us to the challenges and the shortfalls and then giving us a presentation. But anyway, we need to deal with this, so I'll proceed. Thanks for the presentation. My first question is, I received a document last night, and it was marked confidential, and this is your turnaround strategy. I would like to know why the turnaround strategy is marked confidential. Because of all the challenges we have in this department, I'm sure the public out there, our taxpayers, really wants to know how and what are we going to do to turn around the burning issues in this department, to make it work and to at least spend their money in a very appropriate manner. So I'd like to know why that is marked confidential. My second question is, the AG has mentioned during his presentation to this committee that during the course of the financial year, the past financial year, that's 2011-2012, he has met with the top structure and the ministers 4 times and has alerted them to the burning issues. He has shown them the warning signs that this department, well, though you have an unqualified audit, you must remember it's an unqualified audit with findings. And they were trying to rectify what, or tell you how to do things to rectify issues in the department. If for a year this has happened and they have promised us that it is the truth, why have all these issues not been attended to, or why has some of these issues not even been attended to? Why do we still have the huge amount in irregular and unauthorized expenditure? My third question is on donor funding, and I still don't understand. And I've picked it up in the report on page 127 when I worked through it. There was a refund to CEDA Sweden to the amount of 3038. I would like to know, why was this done? And can you perhaps elaborate more? Tell us why this funding was refunded to CEDA Sweden. And then I'd also like you to elaborate on overall funding received by this department. Overall funding, donor funding received by this department. Specify for us for which programs it was, the outcomes of the donor funding for the programs, and are there any reports to certify the outcomes of the donor funding? I'd like you to speak on that one. And my fourth question is, notches exceeding notches, not adhering to the PFMA. I cannot believe that this department did that. I'd like to know how you are going to turn this around, because people are already receiving salaries at these notches. How on earth are you going to tell those people we're taking you down from those notches, giving you the notches that you ought to have? That should have been done right at the beginning, and I cannot believe that the department has slipped up on that one. I would also like to know if any performance bonuses were paid to any officials. And if it was paid, what were the amounts paid? Because in my view, no official did really qualify for a performance bonus. My last question, Chair, is because of the unauthorized expenditure, which is now at 25.153 and irregular at 35.120, how will the department implement the turnaround strategy plan, starting off with a deficit for the new financial year? You're going to start off with a deficit. Nobody's going to just write off the money that you have overspent. And then I remember that the Deputy Minister spoke on fraud and corruption in her budget speech, Minister. And you also alerted us to the Flaxman report. I would just like to know if that is the report. Now, the Deputy Minister in our May-June meeting on the other side, that was in room 7. But the Deputy Minister also spoke on corruption and fraud. The Deputy Minister also spoke on corruption and fraud. Is this also taken up in the Flaxman report? That is the only thing that I'd like to know. And if the committee may have a copy of this report. And then my very last question. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Honourable Minister. And my last question. There has been a National Women's Conference held in 2011. Has the department implemented the resolution of this conference? And what is the progress in this regard? I thank you. And Chairperson, if I may just ask for permission to leave the meeting, as I have two very important other meetings. Thank you, Minister, and please accept my apology. I thank you. Chairperson, I sincerely want to take the minister on. I did not do what I did for media issues. What I did is for the concern of this department not doing what they ought to do, not at least exceeding anything, not implementing or monitoring anything, and failing in their right to at least give our women, children, and persons with disabilities what they ought to get from this department. Okay. I'm not playing for the media. Yeah. If that is how the minister is, I'm a member of this committee. I am a member chosen by voters of this country, and I am allowed to ask questions.
Yeah, Honourable Member Lamola, I think if you are right, let me just explain to the Minister that you did indicate yesterday that you want to, would like to be excused. That is why I gave you, you know, the earlier, I mean, the earliest opportunity to raise what she wanted to raise. She did mention it yesterday.
But it is not true.
It's not a scheduled day.
No, I just want to say on record, it is not true this department has not done anything. This department has had big challenges, and we were honest enough to say in our budget vote there are problems of corruption, of fraud, and we're investigating. And we were honest enough.
And
I listen to you. We were honest enough to do the investigation and to submit a report. Who has ever submitted an investigation of their department to Parliament? We have done that. And we have worked with the Auditor General. And we are complying on implementing the recommendations of this report and of the Auditor General. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, that's why I said. Can we proceed?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you very much to the Department and the Minister for your thorough presentation. And it was quite a, you know, it was a very well presented presentation. It's unfortunate that I had to come in at this stage. In fact, Minister, I was at the Appropriations Committee when you had tabled there the fact that you are investigating fraud, mismanagement and corruption. I was there. And I would like to thank you for coming today to table that report. I think it would really help the department. I would therefore want to ask whether an indication can be given from the report how much money was lost to fraud and corruption, firstly. Secondly, I want some clarity on the status of the DG. I remember being in the Appropriations Committee where firstly it was reported that she was on sick leave, and at a following meeting of the Appropriations Committee, it was reported that she's been put on special leave. And I just wanted to know the status in this regard. Thirdly, looking at the year under review, there has been, and I know this has been said in the presentation as well, there has been non-compliance with Section 39 of the PMFA. And the Minister, in the presentation, you have alluded to the fact that the CFO is no longer with the department. But I now want to ask, since there has been blatant non-compliance with the PMFA, and that actual clause is very clear when it spells out the responsibilities of the accounting officer, I would like to know whether we will be pursuing legal action against the CFO, Minister. And then with regards to the over-expenditure, And I, like the Minister said, you've been very honest with regards to the problems that you have experienced. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems is a cancer, which is a cancer not only in this department but in other departments as well, which is supply chain management. And in fact, in the Auditor General's report, it highlights here that the department has not been able to comply with these regulations, with the supply chain management regulations, and it says that appropriate action should be taken against the appropriate officials. But I then want to ask, when we talk about over-expenditure, there has been amounts highlighted with regards to the over-expenditure. For example, the compensation budget, which had been exceeded by 11.2 million, or not compensation budget, sorry, the goods and services budget, which had been overspent by 12.4 million. And if we look at the breakdown of the goods and services expenditure, the main cost drivers were advertising at 6.5 million, catering 4.5 million, communications 3.3 million, consultants 8 million, audit fees 2.5, inventory 2.7, travel 18.9, and venues and facilities 2.6. Now my question is, considering that supply chain management has been a high-risk area, can we safely say that the correct procedures were followed in awarding tenders or you know, giving people contracts for providing these services? For example, I want to zoom in into the $2 million that was spent on the catering for the Women's Day event. Do we know the service provider, what the correct tender process is followed, and how many people attend? I also want to focus on the issue of ceremonies. I'm concerned that we've spent a lot of money on ceremonies. I know in the next financial year, I think I've heard Mr. Llewellyn Lowe saying it's no longer within the budget of the department. But I want to know, for example, we've overspent our budget, largely focusing on ceremonies and events, but have we really delivered on our core mandate? And therefore, I want to ask specifically with regards to what is the current status of the National Program of Action for Children? What is the current status of the Sanitary Dignity Campaign? How many schools and how many girls were reached during this financial period? And then specifically with campaigns and events, what were the tangible outcomes of the events listed by the department? Did we get value for taxpayer money? And I just want to also quickly focus on the issue of the root causes of the department. Again, the minister has been quite honest saying that the report has revealed that people did not have the required skills. The skills audit, what is the time frame? Do we have a time frame when this will be completed? And crucial vacancies as well, the 11%, do we have a sort of time frame that we're focusing on since this is really the root cause of the department's woes? And with that, I think I've asked enough. Thank you very much.
I want to thank you, want to thank the department for the presentation. And I just want to like to know to what extent did the department allocate budgets to give effect to legislation such as the Domestic Violence Act and the Children's Act. And the next one is how is the department use legislation to fulfill its mandate of mainstreaming the rights of children, women, children, and people with disabilities. That's all for now, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to thank the Minister for the report which he gave to us and the department, also the initiative they've tried through their problems which have been encountered before. I just have some few questions here which Chairperson, through you, try not to waste no time for you. The department over expenditure has more than doubled since last year, with a deficit of over 23 million. How will the department avoid over expenditure of this magnitude in future? Has the department identified any mechanisms in this regard? The second question is, given that the 23 million deficit that constitutes from the 2012-2013 budget, how will the department compensate for this in the next financial year? From the brief report of the minister in the beginning, that is the third question. She indicated that the department does not have the DG and the HR. My question is, pardon? Is there any the CFO and the HR also, if I'm not wrong, the CFO. I would like to find out from the department of the minister that when does this position be filled without borrowing somebody from the other department or giving somebody to act temporarily. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do you want to? Yes, okay. I've got only one question to ask the Minister for the presentation. On the report on goods and service expenditure analysis, April 2011 to March 2012, it said that on the events relating to the foreign travel are further to New York, only three delegation of three persons went to New York. I would like to find a justification to the minister and this question, because it was a very the media was very loud on this, everybody was very loud on this, that it was a very big delegation that went to New York. But on your report you say it's only three persons. So I would like the clarification on that.
Thank you. Let me just throw mine also into the basket on the slide. On page 2, where we talk about performance monitoring and evaluation policy has been developed to institutionalize planning in the department. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? And also where you say, with the recent confirmation of additional funding, training on monitoring and evaluation will be prioritized. By who and by when? Can you please give us time frame?
Honorable DM. Chairperson, thank you very much. I posed the question to the AG the other day, but it was not answered because the department was not there. But I think I must ask that question now, since the department is here. Thanks for the presentation, Minister, of this department. The question was, can you explain what it means by employees of department performing remunerative work outside their employment in the department? Who were these officials and what did they do for how long? Thank you. Sorry, there's another thing. The issue of these national events. You know, I'm a little bit worried that people must be transported from where they are to the events. Can't these events taken where like for instance, rural women, can the events taken to rural areas? If it's children or people with disabilities, can the events taken where they are for us to avoid these over expenditures and so forth? Thank you.
Can I make an addition on what honourable member has said? I think networking is a system that can be practiced in the government, between government departments. So I would like to know, should it only be the department that carries the cost of bringing women where the event is? I think if women, obviously, the women come from the municipalities, from different provinces and regions. So why doesn't the department liaise with the municipalities to travel to pay for their own women to attend to this national event? Because by so doing, if the municipality can pay for their women, it won't cost so much from the department. So why is the department actually taking this task rather than sharing it with the municipalities and the provinces? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when I started, I did allude to the fact that I had no DG, I had no CFO, I had no HR. There were warm bodies there in the department. But National Treasury came back to us after looking at the department and its challenges. And this was their finding, that there was a DG, but she was not a DG. That there was a CFO, but she was, the AG actually said she lied. She told lies. She was dishonest. That there was HR, but all this mess here, they are responsible for. They were there as warm bodies, but they were dishonest. They were telling me they are going to implement this and we agree in front of the AG. The next meeting, nothing has been done. The DG would commit and say we're putting in systems. In fact, systems are already in place. The AG comes back and says, Minister, you have been misled. Nothing has been done. That is what I'm talking about. And when, as minister, you want to intervene, you are taken to the newspapers. They are told you are interfering. You are not allowing a DG to do her work. You are interfering. Even when I had to intervene more than a year, the Auditor General has been talking to us to employ an internal auditor. And that did not happen. I don't know what the plan of the DG was in not implementing the AG's recommendations. I had to sit in the interview. Because I was told people were not there, don't have the skills. We identified 3 qualified internal auditors in that interview. We were spoiled for choice, but I was told skills are scarce for more than a year. So I want to say that all these questions, what has been done, what has been implemented, I'm not the implementing officer. The DG. Duty is to ensure that our strategic plan is implemented, our APP is implemented. If she does not have the commitment, if she does not have the will, I can take her to the river. I cannot force her to drink. That is the answer I have for you. So for over a year, I had to deal with that frustration. I wrote to the president. I wrote to the Minister of Public Service and Administration. I wrote to the Auditor General. She wrote back and said, I don't like her, and so on and so on. All I wanted her to do was to be accountable. And therefore she asked for a transfer. She was transferred by the Minister of Public Service. And now I'm here in Parliament. I must answer for things that she, as accounting officer, should be answering to these honorable members. But I'm saying I did what I could. I asked the Auditor General to investigate. There is the report of the Auditor General. He has clearly corroborated what National Treasury said, that there was no DG or no commitment from the DG. You asked me. PSMA was violated every day in that department. When I intervened, I was told I'm interfering. Last year, I was told we don't have the personnel. This year, and that we didn't have the system. This year, I've given the chairperson, I don't know if I gave it, a report that was written by the CFO that clearly demonstrates that the DG violated. Did I give it to you? No. This one is written by the former CFO who says, I advise the DG to follow proper supply chain system procedures. Here is a letter from the DG. Review as an order issued to Madumo Consulting and Projects. The above matter, this is about our strategic plan for this year. Because last year we were told we don't have supply chain. This year we had supply chain, but she still continues. She fires a consulting company that was employed. She does not say they were inefficient or they failed in their work. She just says, this letter serves to confirm that the Department of Women, Children and Disabilities hereby review the order issued to Modimo Consulting and Projects Limited for design, layout and printing of Departmental Strategic Plan 2012 to 2016. The department commits to issuing another order. So he's giving him a job without following. She's committing that she's not going to follow supply chain. Another order of the same value as the council's order for printing of one of the next department documents. So this man has got a job from my department. No systems have been followed. What do you do when a DG does this? What do you do? I wrote to her and confronted her that she has violated PFMA. She said, no, she was not responsible. Somebody else has not done it. And I consulted the CFO. CFO said, I advise her. And she said, I must listen to her. I'm a junior. This is the report, Chairperson. So I'm just saying, I found myself in a situation. As minister, there's nothing much you can do because you have a job and your DG has got a job to do. And ultimately, I have got the report of the Auditor General. I have instituted an investigation in her office where there was allegation of nepotism, in her office where there was allegation of fraud, in the department where there was allegation of mismanagement. There is the report by Flaxman and is pointing directly to her and number of officials, including CFO and HR. I have suspended all the officials that have been mentioned in that report and in the AG's report. I am also sending her her charges, even as she is in Vumala. I don't know what more can I do. We tried, despite all these challenges, to work with the rest of the officials. And yes, 60% is not much, but 60% clearly demonstrates that we did have the will, we struggled with the, despite these serious challenges. For instance, I don't know how much a director is paid. I have asked for a payroll. I only got a copy of the payroll when the DG left. Many times. They were there. I asked for a copy of the payroll. I only got a copy of the payroll when the DG was there. Where you find a director is earning 50,000 rand. A chief director is earning 43,000 rand. Where you find a new chief director is earning 57,000 rand. A ordinary chief director are earning 43,000 rand. When you ask for this payroll, it disappears and the DG promises to get it to you. It never comes. So, yes, we're implementing, yes, Chairperson, we're implementing disciplinary measures. We are getting advice from the lawyers, how do we recoup the money? But if I employ you, I give you a letter as the DG, it's not your fault that I gave you 1 million for your salary. And we're not going to say no. We're not going to say, I also want to earn that money, whether I deserve it or not. So, the person who gives you the letter and employs you outside the precincts of the public service is the one that must account. So that is the difficulty we have. We're now sitting with these people here. But despite that, we have asked the relevant authorities to assist us with skills audit, to assist us with assessment of qualifications so that we can act, because we cannot just act outside the law. Whether we're pursuing, yes, we're pursuing legal action. The consultant advertising, again, is the task of the DG, really. She's the one who employs consultants. She's the one who employs, does the advertising. I may not be able to go. As you can see, these are mostly new people. Some jumped ship, the CFO jumped ship during the audit. the DG decided to ask for a transfer, and I have suspended HR Chief Director and HR Director Human Resources because of all these shenanigans. I'm sorry for taking so long, Chairperson, but maybe the acting DG can... To answer your question, Honorable Member, we have advertised the position of DG. We have advertised the position of CFO. We hope soon we're going to interview and get permanent people who are qualified. On HR, these people are on suspension until their matters are finalized. We may not be able to advertise. Maybe we can get someone on contract to assist in the meantime. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just a follow-up question. Taking on what the Minister has highlighted, that DGCH or whatever, they were there, but they were not performing, meaning there is an element of incompetency. My question is, does the department have the PMS, Performance Management System, in place? Why I'm saying so, because the department itself could have picked up the performance of the individual. Also, the minister could have picked up that the DG is not performing. And to my understanding, the minister got the power to fire and hire. Why it didn't happen? Thank you.
In this country, the minister does not hire a DG. A DG is hired by cabinet. The minister can just fire a DG. Thank you very much.
Questions and then responses.
Yes.
Does the department have the PMS? Hence, those who are not performing, they could have been picked up in terms of PMS element. Now, I didn't get the answer from the minister that the performance management system, is it in place in the department? Thank you.
Chair, just to start with that, the department does have a performance management system. People have performance agreements, and there's quarterly and annual assessments. One of the things that has come back, one of the things that we need to improve is to make sure that the performance agreements talk exactly to the requirements of the law. So, for instance, if you are a CFO, your performance agreement must talk exactly to what the CFO is expected to do in terms of the law. So it shouldn't be vague. Yes. PFMA, yes. So it shouldn't be vague. Right. So that's an area that we need to strengthen as an organization. Alignment, first of all, of your performance agreement to the organizational strategy and the APP. Not really. Yes. Okay.
Well, those are some of the weaknesses of our HR. Our HR did not do what they were supposed to do, but also the issue of PFMA. You've got to have evidence. You've got to have a report, maybe from the AG. You've got to have a report, an independent report. That is why we did the investigation to look at all those issues. That is why we now that we have the Auditor General's report, we can act. You can't act if you don't have a report in front of you. You can't act if you have not done investigations, because then you are working or you are acting outside the law.
Thanks, Chair. So with regards to why the turnaround is marked confidential, that is actually just good practice in terms of documents that are still being consulted and improved. If you read inside the turnaround, actually we are saying we'll get to a point where we even do a media campaign of some sort, because this is about restoring the confidence of the public in the department. So it's not necessarily a secret, but at this point in time, the document is still being consulted. There's still a plan that needs to be done. It's still also, because it turns around, talks to behavioral change. So you need to get everybody on board, even internally within the department. So right now, it's still at a high level. So that's why it's marked confidential. You still, with regards to the SIGA funding, when you get donor funding, there's an agreement that is signed with the government of that particular country. And as we indicated, this happened a long time ago in 2002. So there was an agreement signed with presidency at the time to say, yes, money, dispense it to different causes that relate to disability. But one of the conditions is that you must give us a audited financials in terms of how you spent it. And the money was dispensed to a number of organizations, and most of them submitted audited statements, and I think one of them didn't. I'm not aware of the name, but one of them never submitted. And the condition was that if you don't comply, then you pay back. And because the agreement was signed with government then had to pay back. But now it was recorded as a debt. The notches, with regards to the notches, we've already explained to Chairperson that this was a weakness in the system, where instead of appointing people at minimum notches, we appointed people at higher notches, and going forward, we are no longer doing that. We're appointing people at minimum notches. So far, we have not paid any performance bonuses. How will the turnaround be implemented with the current deficit? We've indicated, Chairperson, that one of the pillars of the turnaround was to stabilize, which means you needed to get money for the current bodies that you have. And to date, we can report that we've received 12 million rands. So we are not in a deficit. But the only risk that we are running right now is with regards to the pending decision on the irregular expenditure that was incurred in 2010-11, unauthorized expenditure, which still needs to be condoned, and a decision needs to be made if it's condoned with funding or without funding. We are hoping that it will be condoned with funding, because if it's not condoned with funding, then it will set us back 3 million rand. But at the moment, we are comfortable that we will not overspend and we are no longer in a deficit. We can't quantify how much has been lost due to the fraud and corruption, because there needs to be further investigation into individual decisions that were taken. And as Minister indicated, we're still in the disciplinary processes where you still need to verify, people need to present their case, and you need to consider that. With regards to non-compliance, the CFO on Minister has already covered this one. The time frame, Minister has already covered as to how long it's going to take to appoint the critical people in these positions, but the ones that are intended to stabilize finance, we anticipate appointing them at least by December if we're lucky, and failing which then by end of the financial year. But it's a critical, we have to appoint them in this financial year, because we need to, you know, make sure that the department is able to stand on its own feet without the support of other
organizations. What measures have we put in place to avoid over expenditure in future? I think, again, we've said that we are not appointing unless there is confirmation for a budget. Even with goods and services, you don't buy anything, you don't incur an expenditure without written confirmation that there is funding. And we know that the cash flow reports, sometimes they need to be, you need to make sure that they're up to date, because you can approve something today based on a cash flow report, and then tomorrow you approve another one and your cash flow report has not been updated. So we are updating the information on a regular basis to make sure that we're working with up-to-date information. The performance, you asked about the performance monitoring policy. What is the detail of it? An organization has to have a policy position in terms of how do we do our planning, the process leading up to the strategic plan and the APT. And then secondly, how do we decide on our indicators? And where we have targets that are similar, I can't have a different way of proving that I've achieved and you have a different way. There needs to be uniformity in how we show the evidence that we've achieved a target that is similar. And also to say, how do we collect evidence? Are we using hard copies? Is it electronic? You know, how do we ensure that information has integrity? Right. So this will assist us in making sure that we don't think that people don't just say, I've achieved, whereas they have not achieved, and then we only learn at audit phase, at audit stage, that actually that which we thought has been achieved actually has not been achieved. So that's what the policy is about. And then you talk about training. Training is where then you take people in a room and say, what is an indicator? How to set up an indicator? Using the SMART process. We know that people have come from different organizations. Some know how to do it, others don't, but now we need to sit as a collective, because evidence has showed us that we are lacking in that area. So we need to get with the assistance of OAG and also their service providers externally who assist in this area. Time frames with regards to training now, because I think we can commit that by end of December, people will have been trained, because now you have to get, you know, you have to go through the procurement processes and all of that. And this additional funding was only confirmed last week, Friday. So now we're doing our mathematics to see now where do we put the additional money that we've been given, so that we can see exactly how much we're left with. In areas, I'd also like my colleagues to add in terms of areas that relate to disability and children that we have.
Maybe just to answer Honorable Member about New York, I think there must be a printing error, because I think there was... I think it's not 3 persons. I think, as far as I can remember, it was 7 persons. I think it was 7 persons. We need to correct that. In terms of the national days, Honorable Member was saying, why don't we ask municipalities and provinces? Unfortunately, Honorable Members, there is no budget, proper budget, for women, children, and people with disabilities. We don't have sufficient for our department. When it goes to provinces, it becomes worse and worse. In municipalities, there's nothing. So that is why we have initiated the gender responsive budgeting program, which will ensure that budgets at national, provincial and local level mainstream issues and concerns of women, children and people with disabilities. So that is an issue that is very challenging. In terms of work outside remuneration
work.
Yes, we have, I think, four people, DDG for children, CFO, the former CFO, and two directors that were identified by the Auditor General. We have written to them and so that we can get clarity and their side of the story. And if that is not satisfactory, either they will pay or disciplinary action will be taken. Thank you very much. You can add to the other question. Yes.
And for how long?
No, they've been given a week to answer.
No, she's asking how long do they do this work. Mm-hmm. We don't have that.
We are all we have is that
there's evidence that they've they've received money. So it could have been once of payment or over a period, we don't know.
Yeah, we just know the amount. We just know the amount or the income that they received.
I'm going to comment on the issue of the National Plan of Action for Children. The question was posed as to how far or where are we at the moment. My response is that currently we have finalized the draft document and I need to reflect on the fact that it's a 122-page document that actually in the crafting and the development thereof we had to really engage in a very rigorous process of ensuring that we engage other departments in giving us input, because this is a comprehensive document that indicates all the services, strategies, policies that the government of South Africa is actually having in addressing issues of children. So we have the final document, and the current position is that the document has already served before the clusters, because we are of the notion that we cannot develop such a comprehensive document without actually ensuring that each and every department take cognizance of what is being entailed in the document. It has served through the clusters. Minister has approved it being tabled. It has been tabled into the social cluster, which was actually in July. And then in August, it went to the governance and administration cluster. And recently in September, it served before the DEFCOM. So we are of the notion that with the inputs that have been given, we will be able to refine the document, and that process will ensure that everybody owns up to what is being entailed in this document, as it is a country document. On the outcome and impact of social campaigns, yes, we can assure members that the social campaigns do have an impact. The core mandate of our department is actually to ensure the promotion, the protection, and the fulfillment of the rights of children, as the chairperson has alluded to earlier on. And in doing that, what is very critical is to ensure that we actually promote, you know, the rights of children, to ensure that everybody is aware of what is being entailed. And with our social campaigns, we actually direct them to a particular theme. For example, the last year's National Children's Day theme was around climate change. And based on that, kids where our children were able to prepare in line with that to know actually what the impact of climate change is, what is it that they can play, the role they can play in mitigating against that. And in lieu of that, we were able to also engage our children, in COP17 conference, to actually engage with other children from other countries. And in that instance, we were really able to engage on issues of climate change. So usually the practice is that with every social campaign, there is a theme, and there is actually the noble intention or a motive as to actually what is it that we want to share with the children. So we can
surely say that we are not just doing events for the sake of bringing people together, but we always have to ensure that behind or at the end of the whole thing, we do really ensure that we broaden the knowledge, we broaden the understanding of the people we have gathered at that particular area.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I could maybe just respond to one of the two of the issues that were raised. I think, first of all, as people in the program itself, which is the core function of the department, I think we share the frustrations of the committee members. It's been a very difficult period in terms of, you've heard the challenges that the department is facing, getting the actual work done on the ground, because it just takes so long to get anything done. Nonetheless, I think the question just around the mainstreaming strategy and what tools do we use if we do not have a strategy in place, and it covers all three the sectors. And I think there was also an issue raised around, for example, the monitoring tools. You know, how do we monitor if we don't have tools? It is a weakness, and it makes us really not as effective as we should. Also taking into account the resource constraint in terms of human capacity in the sector. We do, however, have tools, even though we don't have the mainstreaming strategy, because we're not taking the mainstreaming strategy out of a vacuum.
Mm.
So the mainstreaming strategy in terms of its draft builds on what the Constitution gives us, what sector legislation gives us, what the conventions that have been adopted. And I think the conventions, to a large extent, is our most effective tool at the moment. It's quite clear what needs to be done and what has to be done. And I think the issue then becomes, how do you ask the right questions from departments? You know, in terms of saying to them, the country ratified, not the department. So in each and every department, our questions to them are, post-convention ratification, how have you inculcated the following in terms of your responsibilities? How have you worked out your progressive realization of that, right? What are the targets that you are setting? And we're using that same work in terms of, as we are working towards finalizing our M&E framework, where we are coming up with indicators that will be rights-based indicators. Because it doesn't help to just work according to what is each department already doing. And I think that was the other weakness, and I've heard it here expressed today. Currently, each department can take their own decision as to how far do they push and how far do they go. Each municipality can decide. But ultimately, whether those things collectively add up to an impact is not clear. So the M&E framework that we're working, the indicators we've been working with stakeholders, will determine what do departments focus on, what don't they focus on, and then we will establish a tool with Treasury that we've agreed with that they will then measure on those non-negotiables, that when departments submit their budgets, they will be able to say, we have been told that you need to do this in terms of country obligations. We do not see it in your APP, in your budget. Can you please go back? And I think it will also assist Parliament in terms of a tool that will assist. So that will be finalized this year. We need to have it in place that we can really start holding departments accountable come the next year. So as I say, we're lacking some of the tools we've been working on. But as somebody said to you, how do we build on the work that was done in the presidency? There are tools that were developed there that we are using. It's about trying to update those tools. That's why everything is in draft. So with the outcomes-based approach, there were new tools that government is using, these new approaches. And we're trying to update existing tools to fit into those new tools, that we make sure that there's mainstreaming within the M&E system, that there's mainstreaming within our programmatic work. I think just the other issue, so that is on the presidency. What we have done in the disability unit in terms of the work in the presidency, which we picked it up as a weakness, there was a lot of institutional memory loss with the changeover into the department. We gained 4 people last year. We've lost 4 people this year. So we're looking at how do we strengthen those systems, information systems, that we've gone back into archives. We've gone back to consultants that did work to look at what work was done and how do we use that and update it. And that's why we discovered some of our tools that we are using much more effectively now. I think just the last issue for me in terms of national events and its impact, I think it's one of the challenges that we've seen in the development of the M&E framework. A lot of our work is about changing behavior, changing perceptions, changing attitudes across all three sectors. How do we measure the impact? And how do we identify where is our priorities in terms of what attitude, what aspect, and how do we measure that then in terms of identify the weakness, do a change intervention, do an intervention and measuring the impact. So currently, for example, we're working with MassMart in the disability unit in developing some tools that they will help us develop and then that they will pilot for us in this financial year still. We're going to chart target, for example, education, but that would specifically determine baseline. What we've discovered in our country report development is that for things like awareness raising and behavioral change, and that's critical in disability, it's about attitude, there are no tools at the moment. There are no baselines. So we're trying to develop some of those tools using international best practice. Minister, I've not even shared this with you, but what was quite shocking is both ourselves and MassMart at the desktop, there's not a single survey available in South Africa on attitudes on disability. That's the scientific test. So that's part of it. So those are some of the tools that we are looking at in terms of getting, and also that we can measure the impact of events. But I think a very critical part of the events issue, and that's part of where, how do we measure it comes, if disabled people feel excluded from society, they feel they don't have platforms to speak, they feel they don't have platforms where they are being listened to, and these events might for us that are included seem very insignificant in terms of, but when you get feedback from them on how post an event going back, that exposure, that empowerment, that discussion has taken them forward in their lives. And that's what we are starting to say is, what is the individual impact of a person attending an event, and how does that impact further in that local community? So for us, a lot of it is around how do we develop more scientific tools around measuring social cohesion? How do we make a progress? So we've also started engaging with the social cohesion policy development processes, because we want to make sure that the tools developed there is also the same tools that we are developing, that we mainstream and measure those aspects. Thank you. I just thought I should share that. Thanks to you.
Can I just add to what she has said that, we are building on the tools and policies that were developed since 1994. For instance, we have the National Gender Policy Framework that was adopted by Cabinet in 2000. We are now reviewing it, and we are finalizing the Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Policy, which is based on the national framework that was adopted in 2000, but is contextualized to address current challenges. We are also using that gender policy to inform the bill that we are finalizing and preparing to table in Parliament, the Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill. We are also working on the disability policy. I don't know if you've mentioned that, Lydia. Yes, which also is based on the disability framework that was adopted by the Office on the Status for People with Disabilities. And part of the travel, Honorable Member, is that we have to do a lot of consultation on policy formulation and in ensuring that whether we're talking to people with disabilities or to women or children, the children's sector, they also make their inputs in this policy. So that is part of the traveling and the meetings, many meetings that we have held to ensure that these policies are properly consulted on. Same with the National Children's Action Plan. I think Sina has been talking about that. There's also a lot of consultation that is taking place with the children's sector, because again, that is a review of the National Children's Plan. When was that adopted? 1995. When we first signed and ratified the UN Children's Rights Convention, which requires an action plan for each member state that has signed and ratified the convention. So every 5 years we're supposed to review that action plan. So the work that we're doing is actually building on what has already been done. Just wanted to support that. what the two chief directors were saying. Thanks.
Thank you, Minister. Honourable Member, do we still have a last bite on this one? That will be the very last one. Do I see any other hand? And thereafter, then we will move on to the next presentation. Honourable Member, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, and thank you,
In presentation here. But I'm worried because we are preparing to fight with the department and we are coming to fight with wrong people. The CFO is not here. The DG is not here. You know, all these people who we are preparing to kill them today is the new people. I'm really worried that I can do wrong in this department. And when they are preparing for a report, I can just run away and move to another place, you know, and go and do wrong things. Because if a DG has moved to Mpumalanga, to Premier's office, that means it's going to corrupt that province again, you know. That means really we don't have the system, good system in place. Because if maybe I don't pay a Standard Bank, I can't open the account at FNB because I'm going to be blacklisted. Now there's no blacklisted in government department. I'm not sure, but really, thank you. But how can we fight these people who don't? I don't know how can I put it. It's just one thing, in your report, you don't mention anything about the employment of people with disability. The 2% status quo. It's only my question because really. We're coming to strangle you and kill you, the ambulance is outside. But we're not wrong people, you know. We are very weak now because, you know, nothing. We have come up with the challenges. You know, all these challenges is because my first question was going to be, where was the internal audit in your department to just check all these things? And it just... when we started to say we never had an internal audit, because every department must have internal audit to monitor all these things until you come up with your report. But thank you very much, Leah. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we then... proceed, Member.
Maybe, Chair, we can just say we are at 5.7 as a department, but we have a challenge. Maybe Lydia can just share with us. We have set a target of 2% for the country by next year. Maybe she can tell us what they are doing in the disability branch here.
Thanks, Minister. Minimum, yeah. That's what I want to speak to.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'm afraid the Commission on Employment Equities report that came out a month ago did not look much better. But that was, in other words, reporting for last year in November. What we've done from our side within our mandate is that we work closely with DPSA and we put a lot of pressure on them. We've tried to identify with them why we are not achieving it, what are the root causes in terms of monitoring, in terms of accounting. For example, most departments were not required to indicate how many disabled people applied for a post and provide reasons why they were not considered. So part of the roadmap we said to DPSA, can we shift the onus to the employer having to say why they cannot employ, rather than the disabled person having to find out why they were not employed. We were looking with them at the whole issue of reasonable accommodation. They've got the reasonable accommodation policy that is almost ready for cabinet. We've just assisted them in terms of how they go about costing the policy. So they're busy working with Treasury on that and with some of our assistants. We have also, in part of our roadshow and our public awareness, we get figures from them, although lately we've been struggling. And what we do then is we publish in almost name and shame. and as we go around and actually saying and sending to people and saying, provincial executive councils, we were visiting you in April, you committed, your figures are not improving or it is decreasing, or thank you, it is it's improved in the following departments. And we have definitely picked up a better commitment. Whether it's going to take us to the 2% is a different ballgame. Because I think part of what we have come across in our analysis work, it's such a small figure that in a small department, one person coming or going can make a huge difference in terms of the percentage. The other issue that we have asked them to go and look in the system for us, and they're busy with that, it looks like we are recycling disabled employees in the public sector. So the one leaves from here and goes there. It's not new employment. So they're also looking for us at that. And a department, we've had reports, for example, on a quarterly basis where a department would gain 3% in terms of disabled employees. You pick up, it's a small department. They didn't employ more disabled people. They just lost some able-bodied employees. So it suddenly looked like a big increase in the employment equity. So the aim of the target is to increase employment of disabled people, not play with figures. You know, they say facts can be truth, but truth is not necessarily facts. So we're looking at some of those examples. The other issue that we're looking at, and we're waiting for the census results, is how do we then take back to Cabinet and say, okay, we've got a new census out. This is the percentage of disabled people in the working in the sort of working age population. We want to increase the target to that. Because unfortunately in our country, being compliance-oriented, if it says minimum 2%, we have had instances where when they get to 2%, they stop. And they actually say to disabled applicants, no, we've reached our 2%, we won't consider you for now. So how do we up that target and make it a range in between which? But what we also need to address is the issue of, as I say, by working on 2% and not actual figures, we sometimes fool ourselves. So you can get an increase, it's not reflecting in a percentage because the public service has grown, but you can also get a decrease without the percentage showing you that. We've also engaged with the Commission on Employment Equity that they start looking at some of those trends. The Employment Equity Bill, that is the amendment that's now coming back to Parliament, that addresses a lot of the issues that we've been talking to DPSA about to strengthen how we achieve our employment equity targets. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I've already indicated, I hope... No, come back. Can we move on, really? Is that very, very burning? Because I think time is going to be against us. We left with only 1 hour to engage in the stretch. Can we then afford the department the opportunity to give us a presentation, please?
Chair, let me just apologize. I didn't prepare a PowerPoint for the strategy. So I'll take the committee through the document itself. As I indicated earlier, Chair, e-turnaround is about changing the way we do things. So it's not a quick process. It needs to be done thoroughly. You need to thoroughly assess the problem and make sure that the plans that you've put in place are the correct plans. And you need to get the buy-in from everybody that says there's a need to change. So right now, as I've indicated, this is still being consulted. It's a overarching strategy because we started by saying, as management, we know what is wrong. We know what should be done to fix it, and we are committed to fixing it. The key message of the strategy and the objective of the turnaround is to ensure a clean audit by 2012 and beyond, and also to improve organizational performance. As we've seen in the annual report that we haven't done very well. So at the end of the day, once this is implemented,
That's what we should see as a department. And it's got three phases, which the first phase is crisis management, which is what you are in right now. And the second phase is to stabilize and move towards sustainability. And then to ensure that there's growth and performance. But what we want to stress, Chairperson, is that we've identified that we need to have a review of the strategic plan, thoroughly investigate why do we exist as a department, what are the overlapping mandates with other departments, and we had already started that, and we said we need to focus more on rights and empowerment. But that is a conversation that is still happening, and we can report that we feel that the first target or the first objective of the turnaround has been achieved, because we now have that additional 12 million rand that was required to get the department, you know, at least to stabilize, to be able to move forward and make sure that we don't overspend. So we have that 12 million rand, but now we need to also remember, we said we're in a crisis mode. We were fighting fires and making sure that AG, you know, we're on the same page with AG and we improve our image. The state of the department is that we currently have a very negative audit outcome, and this needs to be addressed. And we are saying that Operation Clean Audit is the only way for us to address all of that. So we shouldn't be saying, at least we shouldn't get a qualified audit. We should get more than that. There should be no findings on our financial information. The ideal department is a department that is delivering on the mandate, empowering women, children, and people with disabilities, making sure that they are also able to enjoy the full rights that are guaranteed in the Constitution, and making sure that the money that is allocated to the department is used towards that and nothing more. The key areas of the turnaround, Chair, remember we've used the AG report as a basis, but because the audit is based on a sample, you might miss some of the areas where there's a problem. So because we say we know what is wrong, we know how to fix it, we have gone further and investigated and looked at other areas. So we need to do an end-to-end process mapping on all support areas. For instance, with HR, we need to sit and say within HR, start from the process of deciding what positions we need as an organization. What is the process that we follow? What is the process that we should follow and see the gap and fix that? And then say, when we recruit people, what is it that should be done? What are we currently doing? See, and you know, up until the exit of the employee, because this is where we experienced challenges in terms of what AG is saying, where we ended up appointing maybe the wrong people or paying people at the above norm, because those things were not addressed. Also within finance, you need to do an end-to-end process, right? And supply chain as well, all the support functions, because that is where if things are not right, then the organization will not be able to move it. We will not be able to deliver on our mandate. And also say the bulk of our budget, you know, we need to talk to how do we allocate the budget. Because if you can't be allocating most of your money to support function, it should be focusing more on the deliverable, on the implementing areas. So one of the things that remember I said there will still be a process where we sit down, we do a thorough turnaround plan with step-by-step processes involving the people that are skilled in those areas, HR, finance, and
all the relevant areas where they will set an agreement time frame. But at the moment, what we can tell you that we want internal audits to at least focus on the areas like payroll audits. Payroll audits, Ms. has already mentioned the challenges there. IT governance, donor funding, I think one of the questions referred to that. Job descriptions versus the current incumbent, and reviewing regular expenditure as well. There was a question that was asked to say, in terms of the irregular expenditure that happened, who got what went wrong, was the fraud and all of that. And right now, we don't know that, but internal audit is currently, as part of the turnaround, currently reviewing all those transactions to say, fine, we didn't follow procedures. But is there anything beyond that that suggests that these were companies that probably, was there any fraud beyond just not complying with processes? So it asks those particular questions. And then from reviewing the strategy, then you talk to reviewing the organogram and saying, these are the people that I need to be able to implement this strategy. Now I'm moving fast. If I can just go to the other area, Chair, that we want to focus on as we turn the department around is records management, because we found that during the audit, there was a lot of, we almost got to a point where Auditor General, said there was limited scope because they didn't get all the information that they needed. So which really raised concern about the way in which we manage our information. So that also needs to be, it's a key focus area of the turnaround. So this is the interim or the current draft implementation plan, and this is based on, it was done before we got confirmation of the funding. And we're saying, at least for now, just as we're in a crisis, we need to get to a point where we have money. What do we do? And as a government, we identified that we needed to at least find about 5.8 million rand that was a deficit in terms of our compensation budget. We found that and we said we'll move it to compensation so that it covers the expenditure. But now we no longer have to do that because we got the amount. But what was important is that we knew that how much did we need to stabilize, and how much did we need to avoid the overexpenditure, and how much did we need to at least address the current problems. And because that figure was readily available, then a treasury was able to give us that money. And also the other point that we were saying in the turnaround, that at least we need to make sure that the MTF process that goes up to 2016, we need to make sure that the department now has the accurate funding. You know, we can't just continue operating not knowing whether we have enough money or knowing that we have people that we cannot afford. So I'm now on 14, so I'm not going according to the document because I didn't have a presentation, sorry, Chair. We also found, Chair, one of the problems, because now the matrix is talking to current situation, corrective action that we think should be done, and also by when, and whether we need support from externally. We found that one of the things that contributed to irregular expenditure was the fact that managers were saying, but we never know how much we have, you know, so it's very difficult to manage these budgets, and which is why we've now reported that we are giving managers their reports on a regular basis so that they review. They can also tell you whether you've misallocated certain expenditure and then you correct it, so that people are held accountable because they have delegations. The other challenge that we had was the incorrect, page 15,
incorrect bank and cash information, which contributed to over expenditure and misstatements in the financials. This is where we said on a daily page 15. Sorry, page 15. Okay, let me go step by according to the page. Okay, bank, incorrect bank and cash information. So these are the systems within financial administration that needs to be corrected immediately. And what you are linking up to this challenge was that you also need to fortify the finance department. You currently have a CFO with one director. So we're saying we need to make sure that we get another director, finance, so that the unit is properly structured, because the recommended structure in terms of the CFO manual is that at least there should be a CFO with two financial directors, one focusing on financial administration and another one on financial accounting. And we had proposed $550,000 budget. And also the utilization of Vulindlela and the basic accounting system, which is called BAS. These systems are very helpful if you use them on a regular basis. But if you just rely only on BAS, which happens to be an internal system, then you might miss certain key information that you need as management. So we have started accessing these records from Treasury and we are reviewing them. But there was an issue that the member asked about the performance agreement of the CFO. We had already identified it as a corrective action here to say that the CFO must take responsibility and allocate the task to an individual in terms of their performance agreement. To say if the Treasury regulations require that you do reconciliation on a regular basis, you need to get somebody that you hold accountable for. It shouldn't just be something that is in the PFMA. So we talked to that as well. Okay. Then with regards to SCM non-compliance leading to irregular expenditure, one of the things that we identified there, the corrective action, was segregation of duties. It's the one thing that is lacking and it needs to be addressed. And we said one thing that we need to do is to implement LOGIS 100%, which will allow us to segregate those duties, because certain people have different access functions and you can't do the same function, two different functions being one person. But that also requires an additional person to be hired. But remember when I was doing my presentation, I said those areas where we find that there were high risk because of lack of segregation of duties, and if you found that currently because of the current financial situation you can't appoint an additional person, then you need to use the risk management processes to make sure that that possible fraud that can happen does not happen. So we are not just sitting and folding our hands. And this plan, it's a living plan, because it still needs to, people need to engage further with it and improve on it. And also automating the purchase orders, because right now we use a manual system that is a high risk, but it involves buying the right machine, because it's a special machine that you use to print, a special printer to print the orders and all of that. And LOGIS, because one of our challenges was appointing a LOGIS administrator at level 7. So,
Locus is the logistical information system that is used in government for procurement and supply chain.
Okay. So also asset management is saying we're moving away from the manual, I mean the spreadsheet, because you can manipulate it. And I'm just going to rush. The other one is organizational information. We've already alluded to what we, the plan in turning around entails in terms of saying that the principle is that we must achieve all targets. And we can only do that if we have clear indicators that are achievable. And also we are very strict in terms of how we compile evidence and all of that. Then the HR plan, because currently the department is operating without an HR plan, or an HR plan that is not based on any real information. We've also, together with National Treasury, highlighted the unclear mandate, or the not properly unpacked mandate, and said that needs to be addressed. And what was the answer? Addressing over expenditure and a phase by phase process of expanding the department. We are not going to embark on a process where we say this is what we need to do, and then we just do it big bang, you know, in one go. We need to have a process, understanding that we are still at an establishment phase. Yes, we established 3 years ago, but we've been struggling in terms of making sure that we achieve all the targets. But we are in agreement with Treasury that we need to have a well-managed expansion process. Okay. I think I'm just rushing now. So on six, I'm talking to over expenditure. We've already addressed this. We've already addressed this in the sense that there's no longer an unrelenting commitment to overspending. But we've agreed with National Treasury that this is a critical thing that we need to still keep in the document so that it doesn't elude us. Minister has already indicated that she has had discussions with the Minister, the Deputy Minister of Finance, to discuss the situation in the department. And there was also an agreement that the turnaround should address ethical leadership. You know, where we are saying there are allegations of fraud, nepotism, and corruption, and that we need to do a thorough investigation and pursue the wrongdoers. Minister has already alluded to that. So, I think that's basically the framework within which the turnaround will be finalized. And most of the things here is things that we're already doing, because we can't just sit and say we're waiting for the consultation process, because we understand that this is a change, a thing that needs to be managed through change management, because we have to take everybody on board. Otherwise, you'll be talking turnaround in solo, and people will just be folding hands. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think what is important is to actually ascertain as to when do we see this thing ready? When is it going to be completed?
I think it's a priority, Jay. What actually delayed it was the MTEP process, because then we stopped and focused on it. We actually started on it in June, actually. So we should finalize it by end of October.
The end of October.
Yes. In the document, yes,
no,
this October.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I
I think when following this, it looks like it's quite promising. And I think as the committee, really, we really want to assist the department as this committee. And for us to assist the department, we have to be kept informed. And to an extent, that one would also really like to make a plea to say we might have to meet also with the department, you know, time from time and again. And I think in future we will also request to invite the internal audit committee. Because these are some of, I think some of these we never, you know, tend to follow up, and as a result, we would have been able to know at a very early stage that we don't have an internal, you know, audit committee. So I think in future these are requests that, or recommendations that we will have to make to the department. Honourable members, contributions, questions, honourable. Let me start with you, we haven't spoken. Honourable Peterson, and then Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Kounis Van Sautimama, Honourable Musimani, and Honourable Saki, in that order. And then Honourable Kegana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I want to thank the department really for the, they are really trying their best here. But then I'm happy also they raised the thing of the focus is, the focus really which they want to take is on the rights and empowerment. But then to, let's not forget the unemployment amongst women in South Africa, since we know that unemployment amongst women in South Africa is really a concern. And secondly, the department has identified a number of targets here. It's a concern really too that the department must guard against duplication of activities being undertaken by other departments. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is also just a comment and then just a question of clarity. I would also just like to align myself to my colleague to say that I think we as a committee, even though I've only been here for a short while, has really been concerned about the department. And I think the turnaround strategy has really gone into quite a lot of detail about how you plan to turn around the department. And it really gives us the impression that this will, the situation will improve. And I just wanted to ask, just on the point of clarity, once you've implemented, you've just said the document will be ready by October, but what is the time frame for this turnaround strategy? Is it a 6-month turnaround strategy, a 12-month turnaround strategy, or do you envisage to see results sooner? And lastly, I know this is a combined effort between Treasury and yourself, and I would like to know going forward what would be Treasury's involvement in this turnaround strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We note also.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, mine is that I would say that it's just a suggestion. Looking at the human resource quarterly report, that maybe, and the human resource report, the human resource department has have what we call a training development unit. In her or in her report, she must include career paths. You may find that in the organization there are skilled officers who can be able to do a better job than where they are. But for the fact that the human resource department doesn't identify them by giving them a career path, they end up, you know, being frustrated. So that is my suggestion. Secondly, from record management, I understand the document is still circulating for comments and so on, but my problem
is when the audit report that highlighted that there is a lack of proper record keeping in the statute. My question is, at this moment, what control measures have been put in place by the department? Because really, if there is no record keeping in the department, that's where now it will create an element of corruption and fraud. Thank you.
Yes, sorry for late arrival, you know my reasons. When I came in, the presenter was saying that they are going to allocate money because part of the allegation for fraud, managers are saying they were not sure how much to use because they are not sure how much is allocated to them. I would like her to clarify that because in the budget allocation, before any budget is approved, they are allocation and they indicate exactly, remember like when we complain about disability that you can allocate 2,000, 10,000, 5,000 to a national program for disability. As far as I can remember, in the budget allocation, they always specify how much is allocated and for where. We do accept there are always limited funds. We've complained about that in this portfolio. But I'm just saying I didn't understand why managers are now saying they don't know how much is available because in the budget allocation, it is specified. I would like to clarify that.
Thank you, Chair. I think we all know because we walked this path together. It was a very gloomy, you know. It was very gloomy when we started. It was like we don't know where we are, what we are doing, where we are going. But I want to believe that experience is the best teacher. When I look at your turnaround strategy or turnaround plan, it shows that you know now exactly what are the areas that actually need a lot of focus and what areas are very critical. So I think with a turnaround strategy, though I didn't hear you saying for how long do you think to attend the outcomes or the outputs will be visible. But I would like to add now again to say in the turnaround strategy, maybe you should take some of, look at to each and every plan that you have written and write a time frame. I think it will help you to know that from this time to this time, this one definitely have to have done. And one time I was listening to the Minister of Finance. He said, we normally prioritize, but if we can learn to prioritize within the priorities, I think it's one principle that can actually make you know exactly with this turnaround strategy that you are having to reach those goals that you regard as a priority, things like human resource and all that. And I want to echo what the chair said, that we are here, we are always available. We must meet regularly so that we mentor each other and work this way together. So with this word, Chair, I think there is a light in the tunnel.
As long as it's not an outcome of crime.
To the department.
Thank you, Chair. I think that the honourable members, the first comment regarding including unemployment in our strategy is noted, and we'll implement that. Also, with regards to career paths for employees, I think when we go into HR, the HR strategy and all of that, we address all those areas in terms of ensuring succession planning and all of that. With regards to records management, what we have done so far, the first challenge was that there was no, like when you get a file, there are some documents that are missing, a personnel file that relates to an individual. There would be some documents that are supposed to be there but are not there. And what we've done now with HR is to say, have a cover list, right? For every file, you have a content list that says what should be in an HR file, in a personnel file of an employee. And then you tick, then so that you know, so that you're not surprised when the auditors come and say, we want this document that relates to an individual. That's the first one. Yes. And also what we've done is to, within the finance environment, we had a very, you know, the situation with regards to the bedroom was really appalling. And now what we've done is to have a proper bedroom with the, first of all, a filing system where you know what documents do I have, number one. Number two, where you store them. Yes, you need to store them in a fireproof container that with limited access. Yes, and then enhanced by a camera system. So it's those things in the meantime that we've done and that we're trying to address the issue of records management. But we also now need to do an information audit to know that what documents do we have, what records do we have as an organization. How come managers don't know how much was allocated? This was actually disputed by the CFO that they don't know. So you would have one people say, no, people know what they have, and the other one saying people, we actually don't know because you came and said let's reprioritize and you've not come back to us. So we said, okay, let's not argue, but here is the principle now that says you are responsible for your budget. When you take money from your budget, we will do it with your permission. You will sign to say you can move this money and shift it there. How long is the turnaround going to take? It's a 24-month process. But by the time we get to 24 months, you won't... The committee won't even be aware that we're still implementing the turnaround because it's now the final details of the turnaround. But as I said, that it's a crisis management, stabilization and sustaining, you know. And right now, the things that are getting members are very frustrated and, you know, with the department are the things that we think we're in a crisis with. So the minute we stabilize, although we'll continue reporting as to how far we are, you'll get to a point where you no longer want to hear about tenure.
Okay.
Mina, I want this turnaround in 6 months. 24 months, I won't be there. I think once we adopt the document, we must start implementing.
Yeah.
I have already instructed the acting DG that we must ask advertise, particularly the critical posts in finance,
yes,
so that we can begin to put systems in place. We can't be reprimanded again and again by the Auditor General. Now that National Treasury has given us 19 million, especially for those critical posts, I think once we advertise and implement, employ the critical people, and also in the core department, I think we should be starting and say by the end of this financial year, we will see a difference.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
just an input. It's just an input.
For what we have said in terms of, you know, what I've observed, seemingly there is a lack of communication. I would say that a tool of communication has to be used to avoid the situation where now somebody will be saying, I don't know this and I know this. In a sense that maybe it will be much better when they come up with a strategy of forming the management forum, whatever, according to their level. So that the information will flow from up downwards. Hence, the department itself is sharing one common cause. Thank you very much.
It was also the leadership style, where the CFO or the DG will sit and say, we're taking from gender, we're taking from that one, and they are not consulting the managers responsible. For instance, the secretary of the CFO is paid from the allocation of gender. And now gender is complaining that we don't have a particular resource. Yeah, so that is the kind of system we had in place. That's why you see a lopsided department where a COO head unit has got all sorts of people and other areas like women, like a week, like have lots of vacancies. Children have lots of vacancies because DG and CFO were just manning those areas, their own areas, and the other areas were suffering. And those chief directors really didn't have control over their budgets. Beginning of the year, they know this is my budget and so on, but down the line, it is being shifted around and they are not consulted. But I'm sure those are some of the problems that have been addressed. Thanks.
Thank you. I think I think in this turnaround strategy, the minister and the department, there's going to be a very strong teamwork, because if there's a teamwork, there won't be any problems, because there's nobody going to do this side and that one and that side. If there's a teamwork, everything will be fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, our honorable minister. I want to thank you because, you know, tensions were very high before you arrived here. Tensions were very high, and I think some of my colleagues will still remember yesterday when they said to me, what's wrong with you? Are you not well? I was very much worried. I was worried how I was going to handle this situation because of the tensions that were here. And we were also convinced that this department is going down to the docks now. However, you know, I must say that, like they said, most of them said when we started that, you know, you actually, the department actually dampened their spirit by coming with, starting with challenges, which challenges were going to be addressed. And I must say that, you know, the coming up with a turnaround plan, it's a relief. It's a relief to us because now it's going to stabilize, you know, the department, and also that the department have also learned from their mistakes. And I think most significant were the systems that were not in place. You know, if you don't have systems, there's nothing that you can do, because then you'll... I was surprised, you know, when I heard that, you know, the department is just spending outside Public Service Act
paying salaries that are outside public service, employing outside public service, and I was wondering what is going on. But then, with the explanation that we have, we have got, and also maybe after having been able to go through, you know, through all these reports here, we will be able to say now we know what we know where we are going. We can see, you know, the tunnel, because you know the tunnel ahead of us. Because really, you can't operate without complying to the PSMA. You know, at one stage the auditor was saying, it looks like the department, they just take the PSMA and throw it there and say, we are going to spend, we are going to spend. But now we understand, Minister, what happened, you know, because everything was just not going well. So we hope that everything will go well, you know, with system in place, you know, procurement, procedures of following, you know, codes, and also tax clearance, which were not there. We hope that this will really come into force. But I must also say that I think another weakness that we ourselves observe is that we don't often get reports, Minister. Mm-hmm. A lot is being said that is being done by the department, but this committee often does not get reports. Mm-hmm. I think if we can also improve, you know, along those lines, that we get reports and we get up to date. It's not like members sometimes they don't even want to attend activities that are there. But most of the time we get an invite today for something happening tomorrow. And there are procedures in Parliament, you know, for them to be allowed to can travel. So that is why we are always absent in the activities that take place, because the secretary would often phone to say there's an invite here, but there is no space for her, you know, to follow the procedures in Parliament, and we hope that we can also improve on that one. I have already spoken to the systems, and I really want to emphasize on this, especially you spoke about bus system, you know, and the auditor was saying that, you know, the type of system that was used by the department was not an ideal one, because it involves a lot of you know, manual work. So I'm happy that now you are going to be really using the one suggested, okay. I think everyone here is quite happy. I can see the faces from the members. They are, you know, quite different from yesterday afternoon, you know, faces here. And I want to thank the department and thank the minister, and say that we are looking forward to working in a very, you know, enabling environment with us, where we can work together and also assist where we can. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, on behalf of myself and the department. I just want to share with the members that I am also as frustrated as they are, but I think with the steps that we're taking, the turnaround, I am sure in the next financial year we will see a lot of change. I know there were lots of unhappiness, problems, but we thought there's no point us hiding or being defensive. Let us just tell the truth like it is and hope that the committee will actually assist us through your monitoring and reminding and nudging to ensure that actually this turnaround becomes a reality. Thank you very much.
Thank you.